Here we go. Good morning, afternoon, or evening, everyone. My name is Howard Sapp with Now You Know, and I'm so glad that you guys come in and you've spent part of your day with us just to hear what we have to say and share with us, share some thoughts and some things that are going on. I tell you, it is so good to just be able to come and just be able to talk and share some ideas and share what the happenings has been. And I'm here with my great friend, Dr. Cindy Banye. Dr. Cindy Banye, give everybody a great shout out.
Hey, here we are. We are into spring. We are into April.
It is.
We just got through Easter. We were both in the Dunbar Easter parade. We were talking about that. It was a really great time, though. I love it. I always love the event.
It was a great time. I got an opportunity to talk to a couple of the other candidates that were there in the parade, and specifically Cornelius and his wife, Kizzy, and they were talking, saying that it was their first time, they live in Lehigh, but it was their first time at the Dunbar Parade, and they were saying just how much of a joy it was. But they were excited even before we got started. They were excited about being there and not knowing what to expect. So I tried to fill them in a little bit, but just told them, hey, be prepared, because it was nice and toasty outside, and you're walking for... I mean, I don't know if it was, 2-3 miles, whatever it was.
It was long, too. We ran out of candy. Those kids were mad at the end. That always happens. And I tried to tell her, it's almost like it doesn't matter when you got to plan. That's what it is. You got to know that this is the first part, this is the second part. Because those kids, by the end, I had a bubble machine, right? Mm-hmm. And we were, by the end of it, these kids are like, I don't want no bubbles.
I want some candy.
I was like, I'm sorry.
I know. And it always seems like the kids at the end always get, left out, because of course the kids at the front part, and they're in the middle, they're getting candy all everywhere, candy coming from everywhere. The kids at the end, it's like, okay, let me see what I can find. If I have a peppermint or something, I have a piece of gum I can give you. It is crazy, because it's one of the traditional things that they've done. And I think they said it was the 80th year, which was really great, for the parade, the Dunbar parade, the Easter parade for that community. And I'm so glad it started out, before, very popular. Then it kind of lost a little bit of its steam. And of course, you always have generations that come through and different things happen and change. But now it's regaining its speed. And now they are having a couple of the collegiate bands that's coming in,
non-schools.
But I was glad, even on, I think it was last year, year before last, a lot more of the local high schools were participating, and I was really happy about that, to see how their Fort Myers should be a community, not a Black community, white community, Jewish community, whatever. And it is all of those things, but for the communities to come together and celebrate together, I think it is really huge. So I was really glad to be a part of that.
I was going to say, let's, shout out to the Dunbar Festival Committee, because they're definitely an organization that over the last, it's probably like 5 or so years, maybe a little longer, but they've really stepped up to help with the organizing of these events, the Martin Luther King Day weekend and those events in January, and the Easter parade and different festivals. And I think it's really, it's really come a long way, and that group has really stepped up and done a lot of work. So, shout out to them for being part of a really amazing, joyful time for the kids.
There you go. Yeah, that's true. And so for Mr. Martin Bird, you and your crew, again, applause. You guys did a great job in communicating and, like you say, organizing and keeping everything flowing. And I think it was a wonderful, wonderful event. So, again, good shout out to those guys. So I'm glad that everyone had a great time. And afterwards, they had, some things and other activities that were going on. So it was just a really great time. So I'm so glad. And even for those from, shout out to the Democratic Party for all of them and the things that they did. And they really stepped up. Some of the Democratic organizations that were there, they came and they participated. And I was so glad to at least see some of the candidates get out and really get an opportunity to, meet and greet and see people in their community. For those that, if you're going to be representing a community or a community of people, how are they, meet them where they are, you know, so understanding and getting a little bit more or a better understanding of, you know, the community and how the community responds and how the community acts and reacts and that type thing. So meet them on a personal level. I want to thank the Democratic Party for definitely pushing, you know, that activity and everyone getting out to, you know, participate in that. So I think it spoke volumes.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I saw those candidates. You were one of the candidates out on the trail, and then, we had Chris Proyo was there, and Carrie Lerner was mm-hmm. there, Izzy Fowler, Cornelius Fowler were there. I saw Jacqueline McMiller. I think
Debbie Jordan was there.
Debbie Jordan was there, right? I mean, they were really out there.
Yes.
They were really out there. I mean, I was driving Chris's car. By the end of it, he's like beet red because he must give out a couple thousand flyers.
Yes.
I mean, he's really like, he was coming back to the car. He was talking to as many folks as he can. And I think that's a really important thing for candidates to get out and say hello. And they really took advantage of that opportunity.
I agree. I totally agree. So, you know, and hopefully, you know, with everything that's going on, you know, locally, everything is going on. So much of stuff is happening right now. And even from the statewide level, a lot of things have happened. It's happening because a couple of things I wanted to at least shout out, because we're not going to keep you guys too long, but still a couple of things is happening. I know locally, you know, with the county and the county commissioner, I don't know if you've heard, about the discount insurance. That's happening. That FEMA, the discount insurance that FEMA has, you know, said, look, you know, for you know the beaches and Sanibel and down in I think it's Marco Island area, but some areas in Fort Myers, because they didn't do what they were supposed to do, FEMA said, you know what, we're gonna take this discount insurance away, and all of this is on the county commissioners. You know, right. Local. So this is.
And the municipal governments as well, by the way.
Yes, exactly. And the municipal governments, because they didn't do what they're supposed to do. So now they don't get this discount insurance. So now everybody's trying to scramble. And FEMA may, I'm not sure what they're going to do, but they said they may try and work with them in some kind of way. But they really dropped the ball for the community on this particular piece, you know. And this is something that we continue, you know, to try and tell, all of the constituents, you know, everyone, all of the residents of the Lee County area or wherever it is, wherever you are, you have to make sure that you vote in your local elections, because this is so important, because now we have where you're stuck for...
On the hook for a 25% increase in your flood insurance, yes. Is what it is.
Yes.
And here's what's wild. So this affects 700,000 residents in Lee
Crazy.
County. By the way, that's almost the entire county, by the way. We're like 900,000 and change, almost a million. So 700,000 residents is mm-hmm. just about everybody. And many property, other home insurances will require you to have flood insurance to protect mm-hmm. the property. It is so unprofitable that only FEMA will offer it essentially and get a discount on it. So that's why we have it. And that saves folks a lot of money. Because guess what? Building in areas that are prone to flooding is actually kind of a dumb idea, but it seems to be a big business here in the state of Florida, especially in a county where 4 out of the 5 county commissioners campaign manager is a developer lobbyist, right? Yes. So let's keep that in mind. So this is how we got here. It came after Hurricane Ian, and it was just a free-for-all to rebuild. We have very lax laws and very lax oversight when it comes to those rebuilds. And part of the problem was that there was not enough safeguards put into these rebuilds to ensure that these properties were going to be able to withstand the next hurricane, the next major flooding event.
Right.
And FEMA said no. I also saw that there were compliance issues with the city of Cape Coral in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So their city manager and their mayor came out, and of course they're all like, oh, we're so upset about it.
Right.
But then he was like, hey, by the way, here's the 5 emails that we sent asking you for this information that you never provided it for us. Apparently, Cape Coral never even gave them a specific number of houses that were affected. Like, they just didn't have good accounting. Which is crazy. It's crazy to me, but it's not surprising, to be honest, because it's one of the things that catapulted me to get involved in the public life, in, you know, politics and talking about things like that, was the fact that I had seen behind the curtains. Mm-hmm. I know that these people aren't doing these things, that they're not doing the data. They're not they're not diligent about stuff. And part of that is so, you know, when we're sitting at the county commission, they can hand over contracts to their friends and make a lot of money without a lot of oversight, because essentially the more data and tracking you have, the more accountability you have, the more public transparency that there is. I mean, they've literally set up systems across Southwest Florida so that even under sunshine law, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they can skirt it because we have bad governance.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing that, I'm with you about, that there is definitely no transparency, or very, very minimal transparency, when it comes to those things that is going to affect people financially, and or if it's going to help those that's currently in office benefit from, you know, whatever happens. Like you say, a lot of the government, a lot of the contracts, a lot of the development, a lot of the, I mean, these guys are, you know, pretty much, I mean, you know, lack of a better word, you know, they're pretty much in bed with, you know, those it's going to help. So of course you're going to, they don't want to make laws want to make laws and regulations that's going to keep money out of their pockets. Mm-hmm. But what they do is tax those that are, you know, trying to make a living, you know, on what they have. And with all the pricing and everything going up, of course, we always talk about the affordable housing. Okay, but the person that's making the luxury condos, they're going to get much, much more money from those luxury condos than they would places that is going to, you know, it kind of subsidize housing costs, mm-hmm. and housing prices, you know, for people that's unable to afford, you know, a $3,000 rent or more.
Well, So let's point this out. I'll make this crystal clear for folks. Okay. The reason that the developers love the luxury housing is, yes, of course, you build it and it will sell for a lot more money. But they also have this whole incredible racket to a certain extent around it. Not only just like with what may or may not be kicked back to the county commissioners, but they sell these to hedge funds. Okay. Mm-hmm. So these are not like going to individual owners even, right? These are investment. They're built to be investment properties. They're built to become vacation rentals and second homes and Airbnbs, okay? Right. And they are not on the books, they're adding to the total number of units available, mm-hmm.
Right.
But they're not going, they're not for you and me.
No.
We don't get to live in these places.
Exactly. And you make a great point. You know, they build them, like you say, not for units for yearly living, or someone to really sit down and develop or start a residence. You know, it's not for that. It's for the transient, you know, they're in and out, and they continue to move forward, you know, there. So, like you say, as far as, you know, how they look at it and the things they do, and you know, going to the hedge funds and that type of thing, like you say, it really is a big racket, you know. And when you begin to call your county commissioner, and I will still encourage everyone to continue to call your county commissioner whenever you have issues, problems, stuff like that, I want you to make sure that you inundate their office with phone calls and with the problems that you're having. But bear in mind, or keep in mind, you may not get an answer. But I want to make sure that they can't say, well, no one has ever called. No, we can secure the data to say that these calls were coming in. You guys just never answered. So when that happens, you begin to look, you know, when it comes election time, then everyone wants to make sure that they get their, at least their, get their name out there, get their face. You know, I'm here. I'm your county commissioner. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Wait a minute, dude, you don't even answer my phone call. You know, you don't do anything for us, you know, so, but that's why I want to make sure that everyone in your local elections, they are so important. The school board, the county commissioner, the city council, your mayors, your comptroller, your mosquito control, you know, all of those things are so, so important, because these are those that makes your local government run, and they can make decisions on your local government as far as your infrastructure, as far as, you know, your housing laws and the things that, you know, are essentially going to cost you money as far as your taxing and your tax structure. Right. These are the ones that makes these kinds of decisions. So make sure that you get the people that have your interest at heart in right. the office. So we want to make sure that these things, because I think they're having another, is it Spencer Roach, you know, talking now? He's supposed to be talking about insurance tonight or something like that.
At FGCU, I did hear that. Yes. I was going to say, I did go to the Board of County Commissioners meeting this morning because I was participating in a proclamation of Go for Tortoise Day.
Okay. All right. That's good. That's good. That's good.
For my Go for Tortoise fans, okay?
I got you.
But, you know, they're a really important part of our wildlife here. They're a threatened species, almost endangered. And actually, all the development really negatively affects them. Mm-hmm. They're displaced from when there's, you know, big developments go in as well. And we're having, like, decreasing green space across Southwest Florida in the city of Fort Myers. They're trying to develop even over in some of the conservation areas down in South Fort Myers. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was just a huge, and not a lot of people talked about it, but the case in South Fort Myers in Estero, at I think it was Kingston was the development. They were trying to allow for up to 25 panther deaths a year, like increase and say, oh, hey, wow. That's okay. By the way, panthers are endangered.
Yeah, they are endangered.
And they're protected. So they're endangered species. Mm-hmm. So that's federally protected, by the way. Mm-hmm. So the case of that development went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they sided on the animals, actually, that that's you can't good. Just say, hey, we're going to have wild, you know, development, and that you can just kill the animals, even right. if they're endangered. So that was a case that was right here in Southwest Florida, right here in Lee County, mm-hmm. and it reaffirmed the Endangered Species Act. Just in case, if you don't know anything about any of that stuff, just know that that's how wild it is here. How it took the Supreme Court to stop a developer mm-hmm. who was buddy buddies with the county commission. There right, it took there the Supreme Court to stop them because they're like, we'll just kill 25 extra panthers a year.
We'll lose a couple, but you know, hey, this guy has a house and this guy has a house. You know,
luxury mixed use in a mall.
There you go. You know, somebody can buy another Louis Vuitton purse or something like that. Whatever the case may be, yes. But that's huge, because those are the things that we are battling, and we want to make sure that everybody is aware, you know, of those things that's going on. So locally, again, make sure you get into the things that you want to make sure that your voice is heard in every decision that you make, especially locally, you know. But then also, you know, one of the great things we've had, even, you know, via our state is concerned, is everyone know about Amendment 4? You know, Amendment 4 is that thing that's coming out, and now we've, you know, it's come out that we've petitioned and we've asking people to sign ballots and sign petitions, rather, as far as, you know, getting it on the ballot, getting the abortion rights, you know, on the ballot, and the Supreme Court. And again, like you just got through talking about the Supreme Court, you know, the law of the land for the Florida Supreme Court have come out and said that it will be on the ballot in November, which is really, really great. But there is a caveat. There is a caveat, because the legislation that went forward to reduce the or enact the 6-week abortion ban is going to go into effect. You know, so I want to make sure that everyone knows that. And this is the person that I'm running against, Jenna Persons. She's the one that co-sponsored that particular piece of legislation to reduce you know, being able to get abortion down to 6 weeks. I mean, most of the time, people don't even, the ladies don't even know.
Don't even know.
Pregnant in 6 weeks, you know, so this piece of legislation is going to go into effect, I think, is it June or July?
So it's 30 days from the ruling, which was April 1st. This came from a court case that was appealed to the Supreme Court in the state of Florida. It was challenged by the ACLU on behalf of a Jewish woman who claims that because of her religion, this infringed upon her religion and her privacy, because there's a privacy clause in the state of Florida's constitution. So this is what, it was a big test on that as well. But that that her religion believes life is at first breath, and so abortion is healthcare and necessary mm-hmm. according to her religion, if you know, if it's important. So so the Supreme Court struck that down, the 15-week abortion ban, which was passed in the 2022 Florida legislature. Right,
exactly.
And so the way that they wrote the law in 2023 session, that was the 6-week abortion ban, was basically, okay, 30 days after that one, it will go in effect. Mm-hmm. So as of today, and we're recording here April 2nd, mm-hmm. Abortion is outlawed in the state of Florida after 15 weeks.
Right.
By come June, mm-hmm. it will be 6 weeks. And, yes. you know, It's a very strange time, because it is like we had this big victory to have abortion access get on the ballot. The Supreme Court approved the language. We're not voting on that until November.
Exactly.
So we actually in the state of Florida are going to be living under some of the most restrictive abortion laws in the country for at like minimum 6 months.
Exactly. Because even when, and I'm not going to say, and I do believe that it's, you know, that we're going to have a victory there. But like you say, even then, just because November comes doesn't mean that at that point, everything changes,
right?
You know, so we have to make sure that we understand that. And I think we had talked about it before, you know, that it is so much that they're trying to do when they're trying to take the rights of whoever away, take the rights of women away, the rights of kids away, the rights of parents away, you know, trying to take these rights away. And we have said before, because this was one of the big things that started. Well, no, it kind of started back when Governor DeSantis really wanted to go after the LGBTQ, you know, and Disney and that type thing, really started going after them. Then it started coming after the women. Then it started going after the schools. Then they started going after the parents. Then it started going after the kids with the social media. You know, we talked about it before. When they started then, we made the comment that don't think that they're going to end there.
And that's not the end.
And that was it. And so we can see how they're just systematically trying to take rights away, you know, from whoever. And I know Governor DeSantis always talks about, you know, well, we don't want them to indoctrinate and that type thing. I mean, to me, when you talk about indoctrination, you're talking about trying to infuse or enforce, you know, your particular thoughts or values or whatever it is on somebody else. And that's exactly what you're doing at this point, because you're saying, well, a woman shouldn't have rights to do this. The state should be able to make this decision. Well, but then you want to say that, well, you know, parents should be able to make the decisions for their kids for this. But then you have a book ban going on so that a parent can't say, well, I want my kid to be able to read or have access to every book that's in the library. Then you say, okay, well, what we'll do is make sure that there is nothing in the library that your kid can have access to. So yeah, your kid can have access to the 3 books that's in the library now, you know, and so that's the parent's right to say that, you know, it's really crazy. And we want to make sure, and we've said it before, again, when they started, we said they wouldn't stop. And if you can just see, they're systematically going to whatever. I'm not sure where it's going to stop for them. I have no idea. Maybe.
I mean, we're really close right now. I mean, that's what. So, and to be clear, like what we know, because this is very similar to the trajectory that, you know, Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, yes. has been on as well, right? Yes. So these types of laws passed and went into effect. We know that, and I think it was about 18 months time, that nationally over 65,000 births resulted from rape because of these extreme abortion laws. And we know that like almost 30,000 of them, I believe, were in Texas alone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what we're looking at here. Even in 6 months time here in Florida, you're probably talking about tens of thousands of, you know, pregnancies that will proceed. And potentially end up becoming full births, right? Because of rape and incest mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff, because there's no exceptions as well.
That's it.
And so you're talking about essentially, tying women to to a life of poverty too, because we know that the poverty rate for single mothers is extremely high. You know, that a lot of folks that, you know, they're probably not going to be able to get into a stable relationship, you know, in the near future, you know, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So likely to have a lot of increased poverty as a result of this, increased child poverty, increased maternal poverty, and not to mention increased maternal mortality rates, which are a big concern of this as well, because they have the 15-week abortion ban one, much like the Texas one as well, says, okay, if it's a doctor, but in state of Florida, you have to get two different doctors to say that right. your life is threatened
right. exactly.
before
exactly.
an abortion can be performed. And again, it's like, this is time ticking, right? We don't even have enough doctors to even get in front of people, right?
Like, no, I know, right? I mean, so you can't get an appointment.
Women
are
going to die.
You can't get an appointment for 6 months.
Right. Women are going to die. This is yeah. what it is. And it's going to be disproportionately Black women mm-hmm. because they have the highest maternal mortality rate in the country. We already know that the access to healthcare is terrible. We already know that the latent bias in the medical system, the healthcare system, is like that. So we're really, that's what this means. For the next 6 months in the state of Florida, we are going to see a heck of a lot of suffering. And that's terrible. And again, the glimmer of hope is that we do have Amendment 4. We can fight for that. There are organizations, by the way, that are working to help women. So especially when the very extreme 6-week abortion ban comes online in a month's time, mm-hmm. There will be organizations. Definitely check out resources, Women's March, Planned Parenthood. Now yes. will give, yes. be able to direct you to some organizations, even services that will provide prescriptions, mail prescriptions for abortions, pills, chemical abortions, and can even take women out of state and help to do that for women who don't have the means to take care of it. Again, it's a really difficult situation no matter what, yes. but there are people who are working on it. And then I'm hoping for all these folks that we can deliver a landslide come November. And I feel it. I know it because I've been yes. out on the streets. We've collected the petitions. We've been to the rallies. I went and got arrested outside the
I was just going to bring that up.
because I'm ready to fight at like whatever it takes at this point. I went up. There was the mifepristone, which is one of the drugs that is used in chemical abortion. Safer than Tylenol. And it was a squirrel case that was put forth in the Amarillo, Texas court mm-hmm. to try and strategically knock this down, right? This is a coordinated legal effort. And they jurisdiction shop. So they know that it will go to the 22nd District Court and they're all Trump appointees and all pro-life.
Right.
So the last week was the first day of the hearing for the Supreme Court on the mifepristone case. And so myself with many other organizations came together to protest outside of this. The plan was for hundreds of us to get arrested, but only actually 13 of us got arrested because they pulled a permit and the police were like, oh, actually you can be here right up until we started to march towards the Capitol.
Oh yeah.
And they take that serious now, apparently.
Oh,
so
yeah. For whatever reason, I don't know. Yeah.
For some reason yeah. that escapes me at the moment.
Yeah.
As soon as we started, listen, we're just like a bunch of women. And honestly, there was like septuagenarian feminists who've been doing this since the 60s. Like that was pretty much who it was. It was like wow. me and a bunch of really, old ladies who were just like, we're tired of this. So we marched up, the police surrounded us, and then we just sat down and then they arrested us one by one. So
That's crazy. But it's a shame that we have to do those types of things, because we see that you have those that are in a position to make decisions that's going to at least help people. It seems as though that they're ready to make a decision that that's going to do more harm than they do making a decision that's going to do more good. I don't know. I mean, because and I'm not sure, because even with the abortion piece, how that affects, because I know when all of this really began to gain national attention as far as the bans and the 6-week, 15-week and the language that they had put into the legislation. That young girl that was, I don't know how old she was, very young. I think
like the 10-year-old in Ohio.
Right. And they were saying, because of the fact that she was raped and that type of thing, they didn't want her to have an abortion. You know, I'm not sure what actually happened to that case, but she was raped.
She had to go out of state to get a procedure in another state.
Which is crazy. I mean, here you are, a 10-year-old, you know, that because of, you know, no fault of her own, you know, she was traumatically, you know, she had a traumatic experience, you know, and you're going to say, well, but yeah, but, you know, I understand, but you can't have an abortion because this is what the law says and that type. I mean, really, this is what we've come to, you know, that you care nothing about, but you want to, the only thing that you want to try and do is make a point of what your legislation says, instead of trying to make sure that this person, this young lady, this young girl is okay, you know, health-wise. You know, which is ridiculous. So, you know, it really makes no sense. And this is one of the most important things that I know for me, you know, when people begin to put politics in front of the person, that's when we have a problem. And that's what I think that a lot of the, you know, I'll just say a lot of the Republican legislators at this point seem to me that that's what they're doing. Even with some of the things that, even with Jenna Persons, you know, the locally, some of the stuff that she's doing, Governor DeSantis, you know, and the current Republican delegation, you know, for the Florida state legislation, it seems as they're putting politics before the people. And that's where you begin to get people hurt. That's where people really lose faith in, you know, any type of, in which I think that they're actually hoping that they do, but they lose faith in any type of, you know, our policies, you know, our legislation, our legislators, you know, they just lose hope in that, because they feel as though, what's the use? You guys don't care about anybody else but yourself. And that's when I go out and canvass and talk to people. I was out with, as a matter of fact, at the parade, I got an opportunity to talk to a gentleman. And actually, I was with Kira Lerner and myself, and we were talking with the gentleman. It was a black guy, and was asking him, well, you know, hey, do you vote or anything like that? He said, no. I said, why not? He said, well, nothing's really going to change. Nothing's going to happen, because this is what, you know, in the past it has been. And this is his feeling now. And so that's the feeling of not just him, but for him to just come out and say, this is where my heart is, and this is what I feel, because of the fact that I see no change. I see, you know, people doing the same thing, the same way that they've always done it. And they, again, continue to put the politics in front of the people. So this is the fear that I have, that's going to continue until we get the right people in place to make sure that the people are taken care of, our environment is taken care of, you know, all of those things, our schools are taken care of, our teachers are taken care of, because they're hurting. I saw on, and this was crazy. I saw on Dr. Phil the other day, and he was talking about a case that had happened where a high school, four high school guys, was charged with second degree rape of this one young lady, and they were going back and forth. But at the end of the conversation, at the end of the episode or show, they brought in this one teacher, and she was saying, and how it just got or evolved into our educational system, but saying that our educational system is really failing our students because of the fact that our students are, all of these things are happening, but our students are the ones that are suffering, because you have students that they're graduating now, but they still can't read on grade level. They're graduating, but they can't read on grade level. They're graduating, but they can't do math at grade level. They're pushing them through. They're, you know, trying to give them, you know, all of these, whatever it is that they're giving them, all of these other possible advantages based on just come to school and sign your name for the most part, and we're going to promote you to the next grade in spite of them learning or not learning. And it's so bad that the teachers are saying, look, we've had enough. You know, we've had enough. You know, we're mentally breaking down. We're physically breaking down. We're emotionally breaking down. And the school and the school systems aren't taking care of us. But the biggest thing is we're failing our students. And when we get the right people in the right place, instead of putting politics first, let's put the student first. Let's put our educational system first, and, you know, get Governor DeSantis out of where he is now so that we can get people in place that's going to make sure that they have a positive impact, and we can begin to see how our students and our system and everything else, our government, can actually kind of turn around for the positive.
Yeah, definitely. We got to keep working. We got to free the teachers too.
So. That's true. That's very true. So again, my name is Howard Sapper.
This is all heavy. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah. We can go on to this, you know, because I can get on my soapbox, but definitely amendment, abortion, the amendment 4 is on the ballot. Make sure you guys get out and vote. Again, vote in your local elections, vote in your statewide elections, and definitely once the national elections come in November, we want to make sure that everybody, you know, get to the polls to vote because that is so important. You want to make sure that your voice is heard. So again, my name is Howard Sapp. I'm with Now You Know. I am a candidate that's running for House District 78 for the Fort Myers area. I have my partner with me, Dr. Cindy Vanier, and we thank her so much for, you know, our local media, and we want to make sure that everyone gets an opportunity to participate in our local media. So Dr. Cindy Vanier is going to show you guys how you can participate and continue to keep places like institutions like Big Mouth Media on the air. So Dr. Vanier.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Howard Sapp, for leading us through this episode of Now You Know. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love to have you subscribe at BigMouthMediaFL.com. You can get this delivered to your mailbox and so much more for as little as $4.99 a month. So go ahead and visit us at BigMouthMediaFL.com. So thanks so much, Howard. I've been your co-host, Dr. Cindy Vanier, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.